We're just having some breaking news now that a separatist leader in Donetsk, in eastern Ukraine, has announced the evacuation of civilians to Russia. Now, we missed the start of your answer there, so I'm going to ask it again. What's the significance of this announcement? Can you break it all down for us in the context of the Ukraine and Russia crisis?
Well, this is hugely significant, yes. An announcement from the leader of the self-declared Donetsk People's Republic, Denis Pushilin, announcing an evacuation of people on the separatist-controlled side to Russia, to the area of Rostov in Russia. Denis Pushilin saying that the first stage of this evacuation would be for women, children and the elderly. Not to put too fine a point on it, he said that this was in the interests of saving lives. Of course, this is significant because we'd heard rumours of this being potentially announced over in the last sort of 12 hours or so. It was initially denied by the separatist leadership. It now seems to be happening. And what it would imply would be potentially some sort of major escalation, military escalation in this region. Now, of course, Pushilin is talking about civilians on the separatist-controlled side of the line of control. There are potentially millions of people on this side of the Ukrainian government-controlled side that, of course, if there was to be some sort of military escalation, some sort of move, then these people are very much at risk. We've heard time and time again that Russia has no interest in invading Ukraine, but we've also had a lot of fear from Ukraine and its Western backers of what it describes as, or what they describe as, false flag operations. These would be falsified incidents manufactured to give some sort of pretext to the separatists and possibly their Russian backers to launch some sort of military escalation. So this announcement from Denis Pushilin saying that this evacuation of civilians in that area, and that's a very large area as well. The contact line is around 420 kilometres long. It snakes up from southeast Ukraine heading north. That is going to involve potentially a lot of people. So a very worrying sign of what can only imply some sort of military decision that may have been taken. But, of course, we cannot confirm that. All we can confirm is that the announcement for this evacuation has happened.
All right, Charles, stay with us because Russian President Vladimir Putin is speaking, so we're going to try and cross to that shortly. But in the meantime, I just want to talk to you a little bit about the context of all of this. We've been speaking to you about it throughout the day. You've been saying where you are is relatively quiet, but as we've been reporting, Russian-backed separatists and government forces in Donbass have accused each other of launching new attacks. So what does this mean in terms of the escalation of this conflict?
Well, Ukraine has described the shelling in the last couple of days as being an escalation. Some people describing it as the worst escalation since the end of hostilities in 2015, when a ceasefire was signed, and a ceasefire that has failed dramatically to keep both sides from sporadically shelling each other. A sporadic shelling happens along the contacts line almost every day and has done for years. But, of course, it has huge implications for the safety of the people in this area. 14,000 people killed already in the 8 years of this conflict, 3,000 of which are civilians. The UN estimates that around 3 million people in this region in this year.
Charles, I'm going to have to interrupt you there because we are going to try and go to the Russian president. Apologies, but we have translation now. So let's go to the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, who's speaking in Moscow alongside the Belarusian president.
...and the building of the Union State. We discussed in detail the progress and the implementation of agreements that we signed in 2021 and how the 28 sectoral programs are being implemented. And we noted that these 28 programs is nothing but a continuation of our bilateral cooperation and integration that we agreed earlier. We also noted that our ministries and agencies are working productively in every field of integration. The high-level group for coordinating integration is working well and will meet again, no, has already met in November. Close contacts are maintained by the governments. The prime ministers met 8 times last year. They are regularly in contact, almost weekly. Mr. Lukashenko and I are personally monitoring the implementation of agreements to do with integration. We could identify a number of integration fields where we have had real progress: transport and logistics, the transit of many categories of Belarusian goods has to third countries through Russia has increased notably, and we're working towards integrating our carriers. We also are working to mitigate the illegitimate sanctions taken against our countries aimed at making the economic situation more difficult in our countries. We're also working in fields like integrating the payment systems to create a single payment space, integrating the customs and employment law, join up the gas and the energy markets. All our joint efforts to implement the Union State agenda economically is aimed at securing growth and increase the living standards of our citizens. Our other large-scale integration projects are also facing great prospects. The Eurasian Economic Union, and to create a single employment market. All Eurasian Union countries are receiving great benefits from these integration processes. At today's talks, we also discussed strengthening our joint defense space of Russia and Belarus. We agreed again to take collective measures to secure, to strengthen security of our countries in the face of the growing military activity of NATO countries on the borders of our Union state, near the borders. We also focused on the, in this context, focused on the exercises called Allied Resolve, which will continue until the 20th of February in Belarus. I should say that these exercises are totally defensive in nature and do not threaten anyone. The defense ministries of both countries notified everybody about these planned maneuvers well in advance. And during these exercises, as I informed Mr. Lukashenko, many military attaches from the foreign countries were invited and visited and could see for themselves. At President Lukashenko's request, I shared the content of my recent contacts with the foreign leaders devoted to the topic of providing long-term and legally binding security guarantees to Russia. And I believe that, understandably, this concerns our Belarusian allies. We discussed the situation concerning progress of Russia's demands to the West. The main watch of win is the non-expansion of NATO, giving up strike weapons, deployment of strike weapons near Russian borders, and returning to the pre-1997 position when the NATO-Russia Founding Act was signed. Unfortunately, other members, the members of the alliance, are not prepared to accept our initiatives. At the same time, we formulated ideas on military transparency. They formulated ideas on military transparency, which we are not against, and we are prepared to follow the negotiating track as long as all issues are considered together and not giving up those that are our priority. Mr. Lukashenko and I discussed the problem around the Ukrainian, the intra-Ukrainian conflict. The implementation of the Minsk agreements is delayed again, despite our joint efforts and contacts with the Normandy forum and our consultation with partners. Kyiv is not implementing the Minsk agreements and is categorically against having direct dialogue with the leadership of Donbas and Luhansk, and is subverting commitments to provide Donbas with special status and the amnesty, which are key to the agreements. Human rights are systematically violated in Ukraine. The discrimination of Russian population is proceeding at the legislative level. Efforts to reduce tension depend on the implementation of the Minsk agreements. All Kyiv has to do is sit down at the table with the representatives of Donbas and agree political and humanitarian means to settle the conflict, and the sooner the better. Unfortunately, right now, we are observing the contrary, an escalation of the situation in Donbas. In conclusion, I would like to express my thanks to Mr. Lukashenko for our constructive work together, and I am certain that our talks today will serve the strengthening of our bilateral relations. And tomorrow, as we agreed, we will attend the planned event concerning our joint military activity. Dear friends, our meeting today with Mr. Putin is taking place in the context of an unprecedented escalation of military tension around the world, as the president said. Given the acute nature of the situation, we spoke a lot about this issue and discussed our possible joint actions in response to the aggression of our of Western partners. I want to say again, nobody wants not just war, but any escalation of any conflict. We don't need that. Neither Russians nor Belarusians need it. Those informed about these issues will know that even our neighbors, including Ukraine, are not the key players here. The key players, you know who they are. For the first time in decades, we are on the brink of a conflict, unfortunately, that may suck in the whole continent into the sinkhole. We can see the irresponsible and even the lack of intelligence on the part of certain narrow-mindedness of certain politicians and the unreasonable conduct of the leaders of our neighboring countries, their painful decision to walk on the brink, on the edge. Mr. Putin spoke about the deplorable situation in Donbas. People are ready to flee, and as we know, they are already fleeing. That is not normal. I have the impression that certain people vested with huge responsibilities, the politicians of the so-called free world, are pathologically dangerous to those around them, including their own people. Just in the last few, in the next few days, the joint drill, Allied Resolve of Russia and Belarus, will finish. Tomorrow, Mr. Putin and I will attend a joint exercise in the Russian Federation, which the media will be informed about. And as regards the exercise completing, and the president has already mentioned it, in the face of the growing military danger on our borders and the pumping of Ukraine with weapons, Belarus and Russia are forced to find adequate means of fighting off the aggressor on our southern borders, as far as Belarus is concerned. And there is no surprise that we are watching this over 1,000 kilometers of the southern border, and we're looking for points where we would have to conduct our defense. The Russian Federation and I have a joint defense system and joint army, joint training centers, and the military doctrine of the Union State. All these documents and plans have never been hidden. Mr. Putin was very open about it, and everybody knows. So the exercise is our joint decision that is based on the situation at hand. It is very transparent. It's on our land, and we do not hide this from anyone. It is happening under the watchful eye of the entire army of military attaches and the press. Of course, we also discussed the integration of the Union State. It has been 4.5 months since the decree of on the Union State was signed, which enshrined the main agreements to build the Union State for 2022-23, including the 28 Union programs. We are about 30% ahead along the path of these programs. What has been done? What the progress is has already been commented on a lot, and the president has mentioned this too. At the moment, we're paying particular attention on the following areas: customs, tax, and the joint gas market. Even more, those pursuing sanctions will suffer from them, will be the first to suffer. This gangster attempt to impose an economic war against us is going to cost us, of course. We have already learned to stand against the sanctions, and the trade turnover is between us is proof of that. But we have to spend a lot of resources on countering the sanctions pressure. And we talked a lot about it. And I appreciate Mr. President's orders that you have given to the leadership of the Russian Federation in my presence. I'm very grateful to you for that. But the fact that we Belarusians and Russians will emerge from this hybrid war successfully, that is clear. Our cooperation in the economy has strengthened, and bilateral trade has seen many new product lines. And the way our external trade is diversifying, the world is large. You can't lock up every door and every transport route. Another area we discussed was the economy. And it is pleasing that we worked well last year, despite various pandemics and viruses. We grew our trade turnover to almost 40 billion, and that's something we can count. There is no border here, and these are billions of dollars. And both economies grew, both in GDP and in industrial output, and in many other areas of the real sector of the economy. Of course, we all talked more about problems than successes. They are getting fewer, but they still remain. We discussed support measures for the economy, strengthening financial stability, increasing business and cooperation. Of course, I informed the president of Russia how Belarus is preparing for the important political event, the constitutional referendum, and we shall hold it in dignity in the interests of the Belarusian people, and it will not be counter to our relationship with our brotherly Russia. The West, using the hands of our enemies, is trying to rock the boat in Belarus. However, nobody is having any delusions about repeating the August of 2020. This is important. This is strengthening our confidence that together we will overcome any situation and any challenge and build our common future. And nobody should expect that we will somehow shiver in the face of problems. I will repeat, we don't want a war. But if somebody can't wait to have one, our response will be asymmetrical. I think everybody in the world understands that. And by defending the security of our nations and our states, we shall act appropriately. Mr. Putin said, and I agree with him, they're trying to cast a wedge between us, not only just us two, but also any other countries that are trying to unite. Kazakhstan is proof of that, and we appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was the Belarusian president, Alexander Lukashenko, as well as the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, who have both been holding meetings today in Moscow. Lukashenko has said he never discussed any attack on Ukraine with Putin. And this comes as Lukashenko has said he would take part in overseeing military drills on Saturday, along with the Russian president. To break this all down for us, let's bring in Dorsa Jabari in Moscow. Hello there, Dorsa. Putin has said that these military drills are not a threat to any other country. What else did you take out of that?
Well, he made it very clear during this press conference following a nearly two-hour meeting with his Belarusian counterpart, Alexander Lukashenko. Putin said that these are collective measures, these military drills that have been ongoing since early February between the two countries. He said that they are to strengthen the country's securities and their capabilities, their defensive capabilities. And he said the drills that have been named Allied Resolve are totally defensive in nature, and all the relevant parties in the area were informed well in advance. So there is no reason for this hysteria that's been created by these war games that have been ongoing, and they will come to an end on February 20th, that is Sunday. The Russian president also seemingly very happy to stress the strong relationship he has with Belarus and the president from there. He said that they share the same ideas that NATO's expansion is very much a threat, not only to Russia, but also Belarus. He said that also, despite the fact that the security guarantees have not really been answered by the West and the U.S., Vladimir Putin said that we're still willing to continue the path of diplomacy. He also said that there is a deplorable situation ongoing in Donbass in eastern Ukraine, where he has in the past said there is accused the Ukrainian government of carrying out genocide. That is something that he's still mentioning every time he speaks with any world leader. He brings that up as well. I think it's important. We also heard some very strong words from Alexander Lukashenko, who said that
holding a press conference at the moment with some questions and answers. So we'll cross back to you as soon as we can. That was Dorsa Jabari in Moscow. This is Vladimir Putin and his counterpart from Belarus answering some questions.
Belarus. It is zero chance to break the Belarusian people, and they will become even more negative. They will not succeed. When they say that there's a dictatorship, that we are persecuting Belarusians, that's a fairy tale. Nobody is persecuting anyone. We're simply responding to attempts at organizing a coup in Belarus. Just that they did it in Ukraine. They wanted to replay that in Belarus, but they did not succeed. That's why I mentioned Kazakhstan. STV, my question to both of you. You mentioned the sanctions war that was started against you and against us, and we see that the pressure is growing steadily. And the latest in that was the ban on fertilizers. Russia is being threatened with unprecedented sanctions. Mr. Lukashenko, you said there has been a series of instructions from the presidents. What do you see as anti-sanction measures? And we mentioned that as part of integration and as part of cooperation. What is the cooperation between Russia and Belarus in against sanctions, and who can help us here? We must help ourselves. And that's what our meeting was about. this was in the focus of our attention. And Mr. Lukashenko mentioned these are economic issues of economic cooperation. Mr. Lukashenko said very colorfully, you can't lock up every route. The world is large, and I join his assessment. We discussed the whole range of issues, including the one you mentioned. I'm not going into detail on this, but there are solutions. As far as where we should be moving as a whole, I want to stress that this sanctions pressure, first of all, it's unlawful. It is a gross violation of international law. And those talking about it, they only care about international law when it suits them. When it doesn't suit them, they're happy to forget any norms of international public law. We understand this very clearly. We have been living in this paradigm for many years because those in power, as they think they are the masters of life, they always interpret everything to their benefit and they ignore the interests of others. But the path of overcoming the situation is to strengthen our own potential, and first of all, in the economic sector. Sanctions will be introduced one way or another, whether they have a pretext today to do with the events in Ukraine or no pretext, they will find one, because their aim is different. Their aim is to slow down the development of Russia, in this case, and of Belarus. This aim will always be served by introducing some kind of restrictions. And this is nothing but unlawful competition, unfair competition. Russia has done a lot in this area lately, and this is import substitution. We have not been able to do everything we planned, but 90% we have completed the tasks that we set for ourselves. We have lots to do yet, and this is about increasing our economic sovereignty. Many countries in the world even allies of the U.S. are experiencing restrictions, but they keep silent. They put up with it. But as I said many years ago, nobody likes it. Nobody likes secondary sanctions. Nobody likes direct pressure of sanctions. Sooner or later, this boil will burst. Today, it is important for us to increase our economic sovereignty and to become more effective, become more modern in developing the modern state-of-the-art sectors of the economy. This is digitization, artificial intelligence, genetics. This is a complex piece of work. We won't solve it today, but we should move in that direction. And the integration processes that we're dealing with are devoted to this. The task of increasing our competitive edge, and we will raise living standards as part of that, and that's the summary of it that I could tell you at the press conference. The nature, the essence of our talks, most of it was devoted to sanctions and the economy. As the president said, the essence is that whatever we do, however hard we try to do something, even though we focus mainly on our own interests, they will always find a pretext to escalate this economic war. This is not sanctions. This is an economic war unleashed on our union. And that's the essence. As for details, we did talk about the details, especially as you mentioned potassium fertilizers. Mr. Putin ordered directly. We said we need a port. In violation of international agreements, we have been blocked from the routes where we used to work. And you can't do that. If a country has no access to the sea, nobody can block the transport route to sea. Russia does have access to sea, and it isn't blocking anybody. Latvia, Lithuania, and Ukraine have access, but they blocked our access and the West. And I'm just recalling what's happened. The president of Russia, at my request, I asked so that we have no bureaucracy, no red tape. It's not a question of money. We have the money. Well, we would like to build a terminal near St. Petersburg and process millions of tons of cargo there. And while I was there, orders were issued to begin this construction immediately. And we will, in a year or a year and a half, the ambassador is here, he knows, we will transport this cargo there. Well, Lithuania formed the whole Lithuanian budget. It's 30% our transit. We're not going, if we leave Lithuania and Ukraine, we won't go back. As they said, whatever, as Mr. President said, whatever sanctions, it's a question of opportunity, and this is this is about import substitution of areas for us Belarusians, the most modern state-of-the-art technology. We can do anything. We have shown this. Who was the first to produce a vaccine? Russia did. Russia supplied it to Belarus, and almost 2.5 million vaccine doses have been already produced in Belarus, and we are creating our own, we are designing our own technology, and we will solve other issues as well. Thank you very much. Can we go, please, Dmitry? Thank you.
Okay. Okay, that was Vladimir Putin and Lukashenko, in speaking in Moscow. Let's get some analysis now on this and bring in Richard Witz, who's a defence analyst and joins us live from Washington. Thanks for being on the program, Richard. There are lots of moving parts to this story, and I want to sort of break it down. First, I want to start with this most recent press conference between the Russian and Belarusian presidents. Talk us through the significance of this relationship between the two men.
Well, the relationship has been troubled for decades. In as many see Lukashenko as having had aspirations to lead the Russia-Belarusian union state. They have created a common state with some federal institutions. It's not that tightly bound, but at various points in history, there were ideas to bring them closer. And in the early 1990s, when this was taking place, Lukashenko was a senior politician. Putin was a nobody, and he came on the scene, and there was a lot of rivalry initially. And since then, Belarus has been a difficult partner for Russia, constantly haggling over the price of gas, can't constantly criticizing various Russian policies. But of course, all this changed after the failed presidential election in which Lukashenko lost. There was a lot of calls throughout the world for his removal, but Russia stood by him. And I think at this point, he's basically become subservient to Russia. Pretty much follows the Russian line on everything. He did not recognize the annexation of Crimea, for example, earlier. He now does. So he's become very pliable. And I think the Russians would love to have that kind of relationship with whoever leads Ukraine.
Richard, Putin has said during that press conference that military drills with Belarus are not a threat to any other country. So why is the US, NATO and their allies thinking any different?
Because his interpretation is incorrect, to be nice. The Russian armed forces are holding their largest drill, their largest concentration of forces in decades, and they're surrounding Ukraine by three sides, as we've seen in your show, from the north through Belarus, through the center of Russia, and then from the south. And they've taken many steps that make that what you would do if you were prepared to launch an invasion. So it's they certainly have the option to invade at any time. They clearly want to us, whatever they say, to think there might be an invasion so they can exploit that to gain concessions from the West, concessions from Ukraine. So this is why the West is upset.
The other issue that's unfolded this afternoon is that we've received reports that Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine plan to evacuate residents in this breakaway region. Now, this really is a stunning turn in this conflict. And is it further adding fuel to the fire, which the West says is Moscow trying to justify an invasion, a pretext to war?
Right. So it's interesting, because if they wanted to justify, you would maybe want to keep the civilians there and just make sure some of them are killed, and that would justify the Russian intervention. But withdrawing civilians is normally a prelude to initiation of hostilities. You want to remove your own non-combatants from potential combat zone to minimize their casualties, so to get them off the roads. For example, you don't have refugees on the roads that would interfere with your troop movements. So it could be seen as a prelude to an offensive by making the cost of any offensive to Russia and the separatists lower in terms of civilian lives. Just as an aside, for example, though many criticized the Western withdrawal from Afghanistan because it failed to withdraw their civilians before the military left. And it's supposed to be the other way around. You basically get the civilians out of the combat scene, and then you engage in combat operations.
Another major line that's been breaking today is U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin visiting Warsaw in Poland and announcing a deal to sell 250 battle tanks to Poland. Obviously, the details are yet to be worked through. What's the significance of that relationship, Poland now with the U.S., in the context of what's happening in Ukraine?
Sure. Any other day, any other year, I would say, there wouldn't be too much attention. Poland has been making major purchases of U.S. military equipment for years. They've bought some advanced networking sets, control systems, ways to link your soldiers with Air Force and missiles from U.S. Army. They bought U.S. warplanes. They bought trains. You remember President Trump was talking about at various points taking troops out of Germany, moving into Poland. So there's a strong, very strong defense relationship between the two. But coming in the context of a potential invasion by Russia of Ukraine, it clearly has an added emphasis of trying to communicate to Russia as well as reassure Poles that the U.S. will support them in any conflict with Russia.
Well, we appreciate you breaking it all down for us with what is quite a complex story. That's Richard Witz, a defense analyst out of Washington, D.C. Thanks for being on the program.